Welcome to the THATDH weekly COVID-19 call. My name is Rebecca, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Chris Clark. You may begin.
Thank you, Rebecca, and welcome everyone to our weekly call with the Tennessee Department of Health. It's a gorgeous day here in Nashville, so hopefully it's nice wherever you are as well. We really appreciate the opportunity to continue to have these discussions and sharing time with the Department of Health. And today we have a number of staff from the Department of Health, Dr. Tim Jones, Dr. Mary Margaret Phil, and Dr. Amelia Keaton are all with us today and have information to share. So with that, I'm going to turn it, I believe, over to Dr. Tim Jones to begin the update from the Department of Health. Dr. Jones?
Hi. I'm sorry, everybody. Now I got 9 minutes. But it's just to sort of, I think, answer some questions that I think a lot of folks have. The first will be very brief, and it just has to sort of do with some guidelines that we will be putting out very soon that sort of talk about the movement of patients between people with COVID between hospitals and long-term care facilities. And there is lots of guidance, in quotes, from different organizations that represent sort of both groups of institutions, and they're not always consistent around the country, and none of them are mandates, and we cannot make a mandate here in Tennessee, so ours will also be guidelines, and consistent with some states and perhaps not with others. They will not address anyone's wish list or dream guidelines. So they're just going to be a starting point for negotiations that will have to be at the local level and between individual institutions. This is clearly a decision between, institutions that have their own policies that we can't force either way. So, but they're both dependent, and hopefully at the local level we'll have good relationships and be able to work through these things. I think some of the barriers like, getting testing results back very slowly and some of the other things that have been barriers in the past will rapidly disappear. But anyway, those guidelines will come out, and please, when you see them, remember that those are the limitations, and the rest, anything that's not in there, will have to be sort of dealt with outside of the Tennessee Department of Health. So perhaps equally or more important is the message that came out from the governor, two afternoons ago, and has been in the news, and I think the governor talked about it in a conference with the president yesterday, which is that all 330-some long-term care facilities in the state need to be have testing of their entire institutions, both residents and staff, with a goal to complete that within the month, within May, by the end of May. We understand that there are barriers to that, if institutions make a good faith effort to, do this and don't get done by May, that's okay. We will be sending out a letter probably later today, which will have an FAQ sheet on it, and that will also be posted online. There will be Department of Health support for this. It's one time, so this is not, you know, it's not a policy or a decision saying that it has to be done over and over. It will only, well, let me see. There are resources available to help. There will not be a cost for the lab testing. And we will also send out information on who here at the Department of Health can be contacted for additional questions. But I think it will end up being fairly clear. So there will be no cost for the PPE or lab testing supplies or the lab test itself. The test can be done at the state laboratory or private laboratories with which, you know, a facility already has a relationship. The testing can be performed by the facility itself, which is the route being chosen by many facilities. It keeps it kind of low-key and a little bit more schedule-wise under their control. If manpower is needed, we have some available from the state and local health department. National Guard is willing to help. So we can assist with arranging that. PPE will be available for the testing, not, you know, for ongoing business of the nursing home. We will not treat a nursing home that has been tested in terms of if there are positive results. They'll be handled just like every nursing home that has had cases before. We'll assist with, you know, we'll work with the institution on contact tracing and all, you know, whatever consultation is needed. Unfortunately, we can't change the rule about having any institution that has a case being posted online. We have tried. Sorry, just can't be changed. Now, as every single nursing home in the state gets tested, it will probably become a very long list, and other institutions won't stand out. And we fully recognize and will continue to say publicly that a facility having a case does not mean that a facility was doing anything wrong. It just happens, and residents and patients move all over, and you can have a perfectly well-run facility and identify cases. And this is just done to protect staff and patients and everybody else. So those are the main things, but just to, I guess, have folks understand that lots more information will be coming out. We'll do everything we can to support you and minimize the inconvenience, cost, distress that we know that this will cause nursing homes. And we're not extending it to other facilities like
assisted living.
Sorry, my mother's in it. I can't remember. Right now it's just nursing homes, and we'll go from there. So there are other folks here. I apologize that I have to run out. There are other folks here that can help answer other questions or at least write them down, and we can take them into consideration as we move forward. And we know this is moving a lot faster than we knew it would, but a lot of high-level decisions all the way up to the national level, and we're just trying to work with folks to help it be as smooth and easy as possible, and just appreciate everyone's cooperation as it moves forward.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. I know your time is limited today. Do you want to take a few questions now, or do you want people to address those at the end of the presentation and your team can help answer those questions? What would be your preference?
Chris, I think we'll just hold and take all questions at the end and acknowledge that there may be some questions about this initiative that we don't have answers to, but as we're creating an FAQ document and other things like that, we'll work to ensure that all that's compiled into one place. So we can continue with a couple of other updates if that's okay, and then we'll open the line for questions. Is that reasonable?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Great. So I think just a couple of other things from our team. This is Mary Margaret Phil. I guess first, just to provide an update about something that I talked about last week, I advised that we were in the process of posting some updated data metrics and downloadable data sets on our website. That took a little bit longer than we had hoped, but we hope that that will be live maybe even later today. We're sort of finalizing some last-minute tweaks and edits, but we recognize that that's been a question that's come up in many communities. As you want to look at your county-level or healthcare coalition-level data, many of you have very skilled analysts and people that can help monitor trends in your area, especially as, you know, elective procedures are restarted and as some of the restrictions are rolled back. And so we're happy that that process has moved forward, and hopefully this will be helpful for folks. Otherwise, I think we had a couple of other small updates. So I do want to mention in that vein around startups of elective procedures and things like that, I recognize that many facilities are implementing protocols to test all patients that are having elective procedures or surgeries, you know, within a certain time window before their procedure. And there have been some questions that have come up about reporting those tests or those test results into HRTS, into the Healthcare Resource Tracking System. As you all know, that's where we're collecting information on the number of COVID inpatients and the number of patients admitted in hospitals that have COVID testing pending as an assessment and way to try to understand more in real time from day to day, you know, the current burden and strain on the healthcare system across the state from these patients. So from our perspective, these patients that are just being screened, especially for, you know, outpatient surgeries or procedures, do not need to be included in those metrics in HRTS. We need those results reported to us as you would report any test results on any patient from an outpatient clinic or other clinical setting within your healthcare system. But we really want to reserve HRTS for a measure of the, you know, the inpatient census and, you know, current burden of beds and PPE use and things like that related to these patients, not you know, these patients that are just being screened as sort of a pre-procedure or pre-surgery protocol. So hopefully that's clear. There have also been some questions that have come up around screening that is happening at the time of discharge for some patients that are being, you know, discharged to a skilled nursing facility or a rehab that are requiring testing. I think we're still having ongoing discussions about the best way to potentially capture those patients. I think we may have them, you know, be entered into that sort of pending category, recognizing that that if they're positive, they may end up having to stay in your facility for a little bit longer. But we are still having discussions with our team and with CHA to ensure that, you know, we want to make sure that the metrics we are collecting are as clear as possible, not just for everyone of you that are doing that data entry, but also for us that we're trying to watch those trends and understand what they mean, and that we're not creating undue additional work or burden on your teams as you're doing this data entry on a daily basis, which we really appreciate. And I will say that we've seen a really big uptick in the last week or so, especially in the last few days, of the number of hospitals reporting their COVID patients every day. We're now seeing over 100 hospitals reporting more routinely in the last couple of days. So we really appreciate people's dedication to updating those metrics. It's really helpful as we're trying to watch trends, you know, with regards to reopening. You know, folks are scrutinizing these numbers on a daily basis across the state. And so, you know, our knowledge is only as good as the data that we have, and so we're really dependent on all of you to enter that data in, and we really appreciate all of the work and effort that's gone towards that. So we will clarify those metrics in light of some of the recent changes and be sure that information is pushed out through our regional hospital coordinators and then, of course, through CHA to ensure that that everyone is clear about exactly what needs to be entered in those tracking metrics. And then I think we also have on some folks from our emergency preparedness program, Dr. Paul Peterson or Amy Cox from the Tennessee Emergency Management agency that they're tasked over there, who have some information about the Battelle decontamination system that's potentially being utilized. I think we've also heard that there are some questions around that. Paul or Amy, are you guys on?
Yes, Dr. Phil, this is Paul. So thank you all. Just as a quick update, we received a resource from the federal government upon a request to place a system from Battelle in our state. And what the system is a N95 decontamination unit that operates using hydrogen peroxide. It's a pretty impressive setup. It's seven basically tractor trailer containers full of material and decontamination equipment. It comes with 23 staff members, and it has been located at the a location in Jackson, Tennessee. And for practical purposes for all of you, there's information that I believe THA has shared, as well as our regional hospital coordinators have shared with their hospitals and their healthcare coalition, to be able to go through the process of actually registering with Battelle. And there is a process that has to be followed on the website. And there is also some kind of naming conventions and numbering that has to happen on the actual masks. And so a lot of that, I'm not going to go into all the details, but I want to make sure that everyone kind of looks at the guidance material that is out there. But the big thing is making sure if a facility is interested in getting their N95 respirators basically decontaminated and back to them, a process has been established. And for you to be a part of that system, you first have to register with the organization. There is a document that has to be signed, basically saying that you agree to the process that Battelle is putting forth. And there's also a important feature where you can request that Battelle helps coordinate the transportation of the N95 from your facility to the decontamination center in Jackson and then back. So it's really important that you kind of jump on that process. It takes a few days to get through the approval process. The units were just arrived in Jackson yesterday. They go through about a 4 or 5 day setup process, making sure the equipment is all up and running. This is also occurring in many other states, and so the big thing for us is there's no cost to a healthcare facility to participate in the program. But there is some really important guidelines on how you need to comply with the process. And as you register, a lot of that information you have to kind of concur with on the website. So happy to field any questions that you guys may have, but this is a great resource for us to make sure that we have a sustainable resources for our N95s and our healthcare facilities across the state.
Thanks, Paul.
Mary Margaret, we'll kick it back to you.
Sounds great.
Hey, this is Amelia Keaton. I was just going to give a couple of updates, nothing really huge this week. Just wanted to acknowledge that we are starting to see more and more guidelines related to long-term care facilities reporting into NHSN. This will include data points related to COVID-19 cases and also PPE availability and staffing resources in long-term care facilities. CDC had their first training for this yesterday, and they're having another one today on the steps needed to enroll in SAMS, which is their authentication method. More to come on this. We completely acknowledge that it is confusing that acute care hospitals are reporting through HRTs and long-term care facilities are being asked to report through NHSN. We're still trying to figure out the best way to achieve this and to make sure that it's as little of a burden as possible to long-term care facilities. So I promise we are monitoring this process, and we are still still trying to come up with the best way to make sure that facilities can do this without really diverting a lot of resources. I also just wanted to point out that CDC updated their guidance for return to work criteria for healthcare workers. I believe the update went up yesterday, but the big change is that healthcare workers who test positive for COVID-19 are now required to spend 10 days out of work at a minimum, and that includes a 72-hour period after recovery. That's a change from the 7-day period that they had previously recommended, but it's more consistent with guidance that they released last week about when to return to work if you are asymptomatic and test positive for COVID-19. So probably might create a little bit of confusion. We're updating our guidance on our website to make sure that it reflects this most recent change from CDC guidance, but now it should be a minimum of 10 days with a minimum of 72 hours of recovery. Another question that I think Mary Margaret briefly touched on and that we are still tackling with are how to handle facilities that are restarting elective procedures. I think, again, this is something that is a decision that has to be made at the facility level based on the level of COVID-19 transmission within your community, as well as your PPE supplies, your bed availability, and a lot of other logistical matters. We know that these procedures are critical. Even if they are considered elective, there are often people who have been waiting for these for some time, and so we completely understand the need to restart these, but just want to encourage everybody to be as thoughtful as possible and really look through all aspects that are needed to do that. Finally, I think I just wanted to make folks aware that we are kind of setting up a new team here to help support this effort and this recommendation from our governor to test all residents of skilled nursing facilities. Again, we are still working out the logistics, but hope that we can make this as little of a burden as possible to long-term care facilities, and also make sure that the process is as clear as it can be. So more to come on that. I will try to keep making sure folks are updated on any big infection prevention and control guidance out there. But again, we understand that there are still shortages in PPE. Hopefully those are starting to be a little bit less severe, but still happening. We're still getting a lot of reports of them. So I think that's it for me. Dr. Phil, do you have anything else to add?
I don't think so. I think those are our big updates. So unless there are any other points Chris or Dr. Long you wanted us to speak to, we're happy to open it up for questions.
Great. Thank you all very much for these updates. Rebecca, I believe at this time we're ready for you to give instructions on how to submit questions, please.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There may be a delay before the first question is announced. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1. And our first question is from the Star Regional Medical Center. Your line is open.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is Ronnie Hall at Star. I just had a question about the Hertz reporting, because we are one of the facilities that it has shown historically that we were not reporting our data. We have been routinely reporting bed status, status of the facility as a whole, status of the ED, those things. But we had failed to get down into the COVID-19 breakout section that showed the number of masks, gowns, those kinds of things. We did start doing that 2 or 3 days ago, but I am still noticing when the report comes out that the THA is putting out every day, we are still showing up as if we are not reporting at all. And I'm wondering if there is a specific area I should be going into, or just, you know, essentially Am I putting the data in and it's not crossing over, or am I doing something wrong on my end?
Sure, we're happy. I can't speak to exactly which metrics that report is based on, but we are. Do you have a relationship with your regional hospital coordinator?
Yes.
I would reach out to them because they are the best to know exactly what data is feeding those metrics and can help sort out whatever the confusion is to make sure that we appropriately give you credit for the work that you're doing, or if there's something that's being missed to help make sure that we fill in that gap.
Okay. Hey, Mary Margaret, this is Paul Peterson.
Hey, Paul.
I do have some feedback that we are receiving from the RHC, so I can relay that to THA and our leadership team, so they're aware.
Great.
Thank you.
Great. And this is Chris at THA. Brian Metzger from our Information Services Department is the team that's putting those reports together, and I don't know that Brian's on this call, but we will relay your concern to him and have him reach out to you as well, since he's the one that develops those reports to try to help us make sure that we're consistent in our reporting each day.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for bringing that up. Operator, are there other questions in the queue?
Yes, sorry, I was listening to the lines. We have Juanita Holland. Your line is open.
Yes, my question has to do with the website that was referred to for decontamination of the N95 mask. Could someone please give us that website again?
Yep, Paul, are you still on the line?
I am. Let me look that up real quick. I have it.
And Paul, if you want to just send it to us here, we typically compile some resources and information that we send to DHA after every call, and they can just maybe send that link out in their email to all their members after the call so that everyone has it and we make sure it's written down correctly.
Perfect.
Yeah, we have a number of documents that y'all had shared yesterday or day before and asked us to hold until the RHCs had done their outreach call. So, You'll see an email from me asking which one of these you want us to go ahead and share. But we will, to the people on the call, THA will distribute the information around the Battelle decontamination system and the explanation of the process to sign up a little bit later today.
Perfect.
Are there other questions, Rebecca?
And our next question is from Lane Lancaster. Your line is open.
Thank you. I would like to ask, I know that there are some places that I've become aware of that are not necessarily doing NP testing as a routine testing. And as we look to extend our testing of employees and patients, since those updated guidelines from 429 came out about collection of specimens, if you can give any feedback related to that as far as, you know, an NP swab versus like mid-turbinate swabs or oral pharyngeal.
Yeah, so my understanding is actually that I think CDC updated their guidance just within the last day or so to actually remove NP as a preferred specimen type, not necessarily because it's not a good specimen type, just I think recognizing that there's a lot of different specimens that are being collected, and perhaps it's not as critical that, you know, that be the only potential specimen collected. I think in reality, probably a lot of our NP swabs have been mid-turbinate swabs. We don't necessarily know that. So I think from the data that we had seen earlier on, and I haven't looked at this more closely recently, I think in large part because most of the specimens being collected are NP, I think we would still prefer probably some sort of NP or nasal swab that, to the degree that we can collect it. The data from earlier on in the epidemic seemed to suggest that NP was more sensitive than OP. But again, I think there's been some suggestion from CDC that probably either are reasonable to collect, and I don't know that we need to fret too much about that.
Yeah, I think there's also a few other variables in that decision. I think one being that some places have shortages of the swabs needed to collect NP swabs instead of been doing nasal washes or low respiratory specimens. My hope is that that shortage is easing, but I think the other thing to remember is, I think NP is probably the type of swab that requires the least amount of skill and probably has a much lower risk of generating aerosols than things like induced sputum or lower respiratory samples. I know at our state lab in particular, they are still saying that an NP swab is the preferred specimen of choice. But, you know, again, I think if you have, if your facility would like to pursue other testing, I think that's certainly up to you. My understanding of the CDC guidance is just saying that all specimens are, you know, that the type of specimens that they list are all considered acceptable and that, not being able to collect an NP swab should not be a limiting factor in performing testing. At least that was my interpretation. But again, still up in the air as to if that will change in the future.
Okay, thank you so much.
Operator, do we have other questions in the queue?
Melanie Epperson, your line is open.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a question from HR regarding onboarding of new employees. Do you have any guidance regarding screening of new employees up to and possibly including COVID-19 testing prior to reporting to work for the first day?
I have not, this is Amelia Keaton, I have not seen any guidance like that released at the national level. I think we are still just encouraging every employer to do symptom testing or symptom screening and then use that to dictate whether testing is indicated or not. But I don't think at this point we or national level agencies are recommending kind of blanket COVID-19 testing for new employees.
Okay, thank you so much. That's good to hear.
Are there other
and our next question is, yes, from Curtis, your line is open.
Yes, we're from Siskin Hospital where we have both inpatient rehabilitation, but we also have a subacute unit that we operate. We have 13 long-term care patients, but the rest of our patients are all shorter-term that we're performing rehabilitation on. If we're to perform testing on 100% of our patients, I have several questions on that. First of all, we already have the rule that we have negative tests for our patients that are coming in, not our long-term care patients, but our ones that are coming in for short-term rehab. We already have a rule that we receive a negative COVID test on those. Are we required to perform testing on those patients as well once they're admitted, which would be a second test? And the second question deals with supply of the swabs themselves. Will we be mailed those swabs? Will we be having to request that? So just some clarification on those questions.
Hey, this is Amelia Keaton. So I think probably the first point to make is that we are not focusing on rehab facilities or facilities that have rehab units or units that perform rehab or short-term stays at this point. I think we are mainly focusing on long-term skilled nursing facilities. With that said, you know, I think for those facilities that meet that criteria, the goal is to make sure that we provide the specimen collection kits and the instructions and laboratory support to do that testing. So I think for your specific facility, we wouldn't be targeting it for testing at this point. That may change in the future, but I think I hope that provides some reassurance that those residents or those patients would need to be tested again.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then one.
So while we're waiting to see if there's other questions in the queue, Dr. Keaton, just to reiterate your answer for Siskin, you're not looking to test in any of the rehab-type post-acute facilities, nor are you looking to test in a short-term skilled unit. Is that correct?
That is my understanding, although I will also state that, this mandate to be testing in long-term care facilities is also news to us when it was announced, but I think we are proceeding as if this is for long-term skilled nursing, not shorter stay rehabilitational or other types of facilities. At least that's how we're interpreting the order at this point.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
We have no audio questions in queue at this time.
Thank you. Several THA leadership team members are also listening into the call. And are there any questions from others from THA's leadership standpoint that are, if you want to unmute your phone and ask those at this time, you certainly may as well, or comment. Okay, hearing none, I think then I just want to wrap up by saying how much we appreciate the Department of Health's time this morning and sharing these updates with us. We did record today's call, and we will post that recording. And as always, the Department has been very receptive and responsive to our questions that come in between calls and that type of thing. So please let us know at THA if you have clarification questions. And or need to reach anyone from the Department of Health directly. We can support that interaction as well as you work through a variety of plans in resuming surgery and updating in partnership with our nursing homes across the state as they go through testing and other considerations on their end. We will be sharing documents that were mentioned today as they become available. And any clarifying information we will post on our regular basis through THA. But we will get information out today around the Battelle decontamination system and in particular how hospitals can begin to sign up in case you haven't already received that through your RHC regional health coordinator contacts. So any last comments or closing comments, Dr. Keaton, Dr. Phil?
I don't think so. I think, again, we will continue to try to update everybody as we make more firm plans on testing in long-term care facilities. We understand that this is a surprise, and we are trying very rapidly to come up with a game plan for everybody. And please don't hesitate to reach out either to myself or to my team if there are specific infection prevention and control questions or concerns that we can help with.
Great. Thank you so very much. And those of you on the phone that ask questions about the HERTS reporting or those reports, we'll also follow up individually with you as well. So thank you all for joining us today, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.